Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, May 28th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Federal jury finds three ICE protesters guilty of felony conspiracy in June 11th protests last year in Spokane. Federal officials say Idaho must award entire $186 million federal rural hospital grant, and Eastern Idaho Hospital says it could end its Blue Cross contract. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Federal prosecutors managed to convince a jury to convict three Spokane-area anti-ICE protesters of conspiring to impede or injure law enforcement officers at the protest against ICE deportation actions June 11th of last year. The jury's decision ends an eight-day felony conspiracy trial targeting Iraq and Afghanistan combat veteran Bajan Mavalwala II, social justice activist Justice Forrell, and activist and Gonzaga Law School alum Jack Archer. Archer's attorney, Carl Oreskovich, told the Spokesman Review website, "The verdict was painfully disappointing. I think it was an extraordinarily aggressive approach to prosecution of protests, and it certainly is going to chill people who want to utilize their First Amendment right to dissent against government actions that they don't agree with. And it is heartbreaking to see that is the climate of the nation we live in." It's the first known case in eastern Washington targeting ICE protesters. Local police arrested 34 people at the protest at an ICE detention facility near downtown Spokane last June 11th, and charges were dropped against most of them. Then came the arrests of the Spokane Nine by the FBI and U.S. Marshals Service in July. Those arrests came days after Trump installed another acting U.S. attorney for Eastern Washington, after acting U.S. Attorney Richard Barker resigned, alluding to pressure from the Trump administration for felony prosecution of ICE protesters. On June 11th, former Spokane City Council President Ben Stuckert called out on social media for anyone who wanted to assist him, blocking a nice vehicle which he believed would be used to transport two asylum seekers from South America away from their new homes in Spokane to the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, run by the private prison company, the Geo Group. Stuckert was the legal guardian of one of the men, 21-year-old Cesar Alexander Alvarez Perez. He was also trying to prevent the deportation of 28-year-old Joshua Slater Rodriguez Torres. Stuckert said he was with Alvarez Perez and Rodriguez Torres when they arrived at a scheduled check-in at the Spokane ICE facility June 11th. The two had work visas and were full-time employees at the Airway Heights Walmart. He said the federal government revoked the men's work permits on June 6th. ICE officials would not let Stuckert enter the facility with Alvarez Perez, and Stuckert said 7 minutes later one of the officers came out of the building and told him they had detained the two. Stuckert called out on social media, saying he was about to sit in front of a bus parked at the ICE detention center and invited people to join him. A crowd that grew to about 150 people ended up on the scene trying to stop various vehicles from leaving the ICE facility, and Spokane police showed up, followed by Spokane County Sheriff's deputies. They arrested Stuckert and a group blocking an ICE vehicle, and after hundreds at a previously planned protest nearby joined those blocking ICE vehicles, police used less lethal munitions and smoke grenades to disperse the crowd. Stuckert contended ICE's detention of Alvarez Perez and Rodriguez Torres was illegal, and in fact, a judge later released detainee Rodriguez Torres back to Spokane after months at the federal detention center in Tacoma, saying ICE had abused its legal authority. By then, Alvarez Perez had already chosen to self-deport back to Venezuela rather than stay indefinitely in an ICE holding cell under harsh and crowded conditions. Six of the Spokane Nine, including former Spokane City Council member President Ben Stuckert, who put out the call on social media to block ICE vehicles, took plea deals last year. Stuckert told the spokesman review via phone today, "I feel just so awful for Bayesian Jack Justice and their families. It's rough in democracy these days. Everybody that showed up there showed up at their own volition. When I pled guilty, I took responsibility. I said sometimes you can do the right thing and there are negative consequences." The Reuters news agency reported that on June 12th, the day after Spokane City and County Police broke up the protest using smoke grenades and rubber bullets, the Trump Justice Department sent a mass email to all 93 U.S. attorneys around the country, ordering them to prioritize cases against protesters who defy federal immigration enforcement and to publicize those types of cases. The father of defendant Bayesian Mavalwala II, Bayesian Mavalwala Sr., said after today's conviction, "They said that you will prosecute anybody who protests against ICE. People in Spokane and people in Eastern Washington need to understand that we were guinea pigs, that they brought the swamp of Washington, D.C. into our area to stop American citizens from exercising our rights that are guaranteed. It was the whole point of the Constitution, the right to protest, the right to dissent, the right to assemble. All of those things are now in question because of this case. My son has taken the brunt of the entire weight of the United States government onto their shoulders." Defense attorneys argued at the trial there was no prior agreement or plan to impede or injure law enforcement at the protest, and that it's not conspiracy when people act in similar ways. The three defendants took the stand Tuesday and Wednesday, saying they had no plan or agreements with others and that they merely acted similarly to others in the moment. Archer's attorney, Carl Oreskovich, argued the defendants did not use force, intimidation, or threat, but did say they were being civilly disobedient. Bayesian Mavalwala II said on the stand he did not know the other defendants in the case, and that the protest was an unorganized show of solidarity to prevent the deportation of two asylum seekers. Mavalwala said he attended the protest because he believes people have a duty to speak up. Archer said on the stand Tuesday he showed up at the protest at about 2 p.m. June 11th and realized he had the most leadership skills in organizing and keeping people safe in protest situations. He said the protesters made decisions by consensus. Prosecutors showed video of Archer walking around with a clipboard and a megaphone at the protest. Archer said, saying there was a set plan is generous. Archer's defense attorney, Carl Oreskovich, said today, "Juries don't always get it right." Oreskovich said, "One of the problems of the statute is it required a use of force, and it's clear that Jack's intent was absolutely to the contrary. Jack intended this to be nonviolent and not forceful, and really simply resisted the actions by ICE to move the protesters out of the way. Mere resistance is not force." You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by the Moscow Food Co-op, established in 1973. The Moscow Food Co-op is a cooperatively owned grocery store that serves as a community hub and champions healthy, local, inclusive, and sustainable food and goods.
Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Office of Rural Health Transformation Deputy Director Kate Sapra told a group of Idaho legislators at the state capitol in Boise today, the state must distribute all of the $186 million federal rural health transportation grant this year, or the money will go back to the federal government to distribute it to other states. Sapra told members of the Idaho Legislature's Rural Health Transformation Committee there was no leeway for distributing the state's entire share of the federal grant money by the October 30th deadline. The $186 million is the first-year allocation of the five-year Trump administration program, which favors red states. Sapra told the committee each state was not guaranteed the same amount each year. Idaho Health and Welfare Department Director Juliet Sharon said the first round of solicitation for contracts and subgrants for the program are expected to be posted the first week in June. An Eastern Idaho hospital could end its contract with the health insurance provider, which covers state employees. Pocatello-based Portneuf Medical Center notified Regents Blue Shield of Idaho the contract could end next month if the parties cannot reach a new agreement by June 15th. According to the Idaho Capital Sun, Portneuf Hospital and Regents Blue Shield are having a difficult time agreeing on the terms of a contract to keep Portneuf in the insurance network, which covers Idaho government employees. Earlier this month, Idaho officials told human resources staff at state agencies the private company who owns the Pocatello Medical Center and Regents are participating in good faith negotiations and were hopeful an agreement could be negotiated. Portneuf officials said the insurer rejects most of its claims and owes them millions of dollars. Regents called the hospital's allegations sensational and said they are just asking for a big rate increase. The hospital could be taken out of the Regents Blue Shield network, meaning non-emergency care cost increases affecting about 5,700 local residents who are not directly insured with Regents. That includes around 3,600 people on Idaho's health plan. Ardent Health executives are negotiating with Regents for Portneuf Medical Center, whom state officials say is asking for a large rate increase. State officials say, according to Regents, Ardent's initial proposal sought a 73% increase in health care costs over 7 years. Their most recent proposal reflects a 41.6% increase over 5 years. Regents has indicated that increases of this magnitude, more than double the rate of inflation, could lead to substantial and unsustainable premium increases for members. A spokesperson for Portneuf said, "We remain committed to the highest quality of health care for our patients and are hopeful we can reach a fair agreement that preserves uninterrupted in-network access for Regents members across Southeast Idaho. We have proposed a modest single-digit increase as part of a longer-term agreement that would provide stability for patients and employers. Fair and timely reimbursement is essential to maintaining access to high-quality local care across the region." And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Reporters at five newspapers in Washington and Idaho were pushed to strike for one day this week after a year of bargaining for guardrails on artificial intelligence and higher wages. The union says the media company that owns the paper, McClatchy, has refused to pay reporters an amount that allows them to live in the places they work. Christine Sherrod is a reporter at the Tacoma News Tribune and chair of the Washington State News Guild. She says experienced journalists are being forced to take second jobs and some must choose between buying food or medication.
McClatchy has told us that they couldn't possibly spend more money on people, but we know that they're spending money on AI. We hope that the work stoppage showed that you can't have local news without real local human journalists making that news.
McClatchy owns the Tacoma News Tribune along with 29 other newspapers across 14 states and did not respond to a request for comment. Sherrod says AI can be useful for journalists lobbyists as a tool, but McClatchy has been pushing it to be used to generate content or rewrite work that has already been published elsewhere. She says the union is calling on McClatchy to ban deepfakes that impersonate reporters and label AI-generated content for readers.
We have done our best to ensure that people are involved in it at every step of the way, and we have guardrails for readers and guardrails for ourselves as journalists to protect our credibility.
Sherrod says the next bargaining session is June 9th, and she hopes to see a better offer from McClatchy. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Police arrested a Potlatch woman on drug trafficking charges following an alleged overdose death at her apartment. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Latah County deputies arrested 47-year-old Heather Wekoja last week on alleged trafficking of fentanyl after a man died of a drug overdose at her White Pine Manor apartment in the 400 block of 6th Street in Potlatch Friday morning. According to court documents, someone called officers with the Latah County Sheriff's Department and the Potlatch Fire Department to the apartment about a drug overdose and the suspicious death in Wekoja's apartment. With a search warrant in hand, deputies entered the woman's storage closet where they discovered several grams of fentanyl and methamphetamine. Wekoja told officers the drugs belonged to the dead person. She also told deputies she tried to revive the man with Narcan after finding him unresponsive. Court documents allege Wekoja said she removed the drugs from her apartment prior to calling a friend for more Narcan. Deputies also believe the woman was high on drugs when they arrived. Deputies said they found dynamite in the closet, which prompted a call to the Spokane Bomb Squad for disposal. Wekoja made her first court appearance Tuesday morning in Latah County Second District Court on felony trafficking charges. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, there is a severe thunderstorm watch in effect for much of northern and north central Idaho and much of eastern Washington until midnight tonight. This has been issued by the National Weather Service for the following counties in Idaho: Latah, Benoit, Clearwater, Shoshone, Bonner, Idaho, Lewis, Boundary, Kootenai, and Nez Perce counties. And the severe thunderstorm watch is in effect for a number of counties in eastern Washington, including Whitman, Assotin, Spokane, Adams, Benton, Chelan, Columbia, Douglas, Ferry, Franklin, Garfield, Grant, Kittitas, Klickitat, Lincoln, Okanagan, Ponderay, Stevens, Walla Walla, and Yakima counties. Forecast for the Moscow Pullman area for tonight is calling for 70% chance of precipitation, showers and thunderstorms likely before midnight. Some of the storms could be severe. Cloudy during the early evening, then gradual clearing, low 50. Southwest winds 10 to 15, becoming light and variable after midnight. Winds could gust up to 25 miles per hour. Up to a quarter inch of rain possible, except higher amounts possible in thunderstorms. Tomorrow, 20% chance of showers between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., then a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Increasing clouds, high 69. Light and variable wind becoming west 10 to 15 in the morning with gusts up to 25. Friday night through Sunday night, mostly cloudy with lows 42 and highs of 60 each day period. On Friday night, also west winds 10 to 15 with gusts up to 25. Partly sunny on Monday, high 68. And the current temperature is 75. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know that your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Flashpoints is coming up next, 6:30 to 7:30. At 7:30, we will have Appearing Locally, where we feature music from artists that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area in the near future. And that goes till 8 o'clock. More programming throughout the evening. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Moscow Contemporary, which connects, supports, and creates community through art and arts education. Moscow Contemporary is located at 2012 West Pullman Road and moscowcontemporary.org.
KRFP is dedicated to the progressive values of multiculturalism and freedom of expression.
How dangerous is...
Okay, we'll interrupt that because there is a new special weather statement from the National Weather Service issued at 6:18 p.m. for the Central Panhandle Mountains and the Idaho Palouse. A strong thunderstorm will impact portions of northwestern Latah and southwestern Benoit counties through 7 p.m. tonight. At 6:17 p.m., Doppler radar was tracking a strong thunderstorm 9 miles northeast of Potlatch, or 22 miles south of St. Mary's, moving west at 15 miles per hour. Wind gusts of 50 to 55 miles per hour and nickel-sized hail. Gusty winds could knock down tree limbs and blow around unsecured objects. Minor hail damage to outdoor objects is possible. The locations impacted include Tensit and Sanders. It includes U.S. Highway 95 in Idaho between mile markers 364 and 382. If outdoors, consider seeking shelter inside a building. A severe thunderstorm watch remains in effect until midnight for the Idaho Panhandle. And another special weather statement. This one is for the Lewiston area, Idaho Palouse, northeastern Blue Mountains of Washington, upper Columbia Basin of Washington, the Washington Palouse, lower Garfield and Asotin counties, and the Central Panhandle Mountains of Idaho. Gusty showers will impact portions of southwestern Latah and northwestern Nez Perce, southeastern Adams, Garfield, southern Whitman, and northwestern Asotin counties through 7:15 p.m. Separate weather statement. Doppler radar was tracking gusty showers along a line extending from near Turner to near Genesee. Movement was north at 30 miles per hour. Winds in excess of 40 miles per hour. Gusty winds could knock down tree limbs and blow around unsecured objects. The area impacted includes the following highways: U.S. Highway 95 in Idaho between mile markers 292 and 353, U.S. Highway 12 in Idaho between mile markers 0 and 21, U.S. Highway 12 in Washington between miles markers 389 and 434, and U.S. Highway 195 in Washington between mile markers 1 and 32. If outdoors, consider seeking shelter inside a building. A severe thunderstorm watch remains in effect until midnight for the Panhandle and north central Idaho and eastern and southeastern Washington. There's also a flood advisory that has been issued at 5:40 p.m., and this will be in effect until 8:45 p.m. this evening. Flooding caused by excessive rainfall.